We are.
We
are.
We are Cultivate.
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 Cultivate. We are Cultivate.
Hello, West Spookies. Christina here. I just wanted to let everyone know before the episode starts that we did record this a couple of weeks ago, and so MJ was not here. She has some fun family stuff to do that were probably better than being up at 9 and recording. Not that I'm not up at 9. I am up at 9. I'm just not recording at that time. It's too early for me. Haven't had my coffee. Anyway, we have a guest on this episode from the Crypto Science Society, which is an alliance of scholars dedicated to studying the strange and unusual. And they're here to tell us all about their investigation in a beautiful town in Mexico. And before that, I just want to thank everyone that made it to the movie night. If you want to show up for future movies, then just make sure to give me a follow on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/spooky_Christina. That's going to be linked in the show notes. And I was mistaken. You do need to have your own Prime account to watch whatever I'm watching on Prime. But this way we can watch it together. You can participate in the chat. I was mistaken about that, so my bad. But yeah, if you want to join on Future Movie Nights, then make sure that you give me a follow. And just one last thing. Our guest did join us all the way from Estonia in Europe and had no mic or headphones or things like that. So the audio quality is a little bit off from our usual. But he just had a lot of amazing things to tell us about San Miguel de Allende. So hopefully you can get past that. And now on to the episode. Hi everyone, this is Christina, and today there is no MJ. She has some plans, so here we are. And today we will be talking about some legends from San Miguel de Allende with a wonderful guest. And our wonderful guest here today actually went to San Miguel de Allende not too long ago. Go ahead and tell us about yourself and what you have going on and all that.
Okay, well, hello, Spookies. Thanks for letting me be on the show, and thanks for helping me find all the spooky stuff in San Miguel de Allende for my trip. So my name is Jason Cordova, and I'm the president and co-founder of an organization called the Crypto Science Society, which started out as a student organization at the Metropolitan State College of Denver in Denver, Colorado. And we study all manner of strange and unusual phenomena. And we've been going on for 16 years now, and we're really excited to collaborate with other groups and podcasts that have the same interests and mission as we do.
16 years, that's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, it doesn't feel like that long, but and go back and look at pictures from like back then. It's like, oh my God, what was going on?
So yeah, let's do the listener story. Then we'll get into San Miguel de Allende. And if you have any stories that you want to share with us, email us at spookytales@gmail.com or send us a DM on any of our socials. So here's the listener story. Hi y'all, I have a lechuza story to share. Listening to your story about brujas and turning into a ball of fire reminded me of a time that it was in a little pueblo in Coahuila, Mexico. We would spend summer vacation with my grandparents, and this particular time, lechuza's stories were new. My grandma said that her little dog was barking one night at one thing that was out on the roof of her house. I was intrigued and became obsessed with learning about them. One night, I went outside to sit on a mecedora, and I noticed what looked like balls of fire in the sky, moving around fast. Then a huge black mass was coming towards me, and I heard wings flapping. I later realized it was a lechuza flying over me and shrieked. It sounded like a cat.
Whoa.
I was so excited that I saw one. I ran inside to tell my family. They were like, get inside. They were not excited. And then she writes, that's my story. Love your podcast. Keep me incognito. Will do.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, you could be excited. Not being excited isn't always a positive thing, right? You'd be freaked out.
I would be very scared, and I would not be told, need to be told to run inside.
Right, right. Have you ever seen a bruja ball?
No, I have not. My entire family and my grandma's from Zacatecas, mm-hmm. before she moved to Guadalajara. And like, there's like a whole thing about Zacatecas. People say Las Brujas vienen de Zacatecas. The witches come from Zacatecas. Mm-hmm. And she has like a ton of stories of seeing like the fireballs and encountering them. And then my mom as well. My great grandma was very into trying to find her witch friends to curse people for her. So she would take my mom with her to these meetings. And so my mom has a lot of like, seeing these things happen.
So she's got her knock list.
She had a list. Meeting.
Like, get that one and that one and that one.
Yeah. Have we done her? I don't know. Let's just do her again. Yeah. Whatever.
We already hit her. Oh, no. Well, she's still around, so she needs another one.
It's fine. Yeah, let's do it again.
Oh, dang. So I have this weird thing. Like, I think I asked you, too, about, like, if you had any pictures or drawings of the fireballs itself, like when they transform, right?
I wonder because we have this
you know, like all around the world people have like different kinds of, sometimes they call them spook lights or fairy lights, or you know, in different parts of the world, but like the fireballs that the brujas are said to transform into, it seems it's very distinct, right? So, like, I want to kind of try to see, maybe do, like, a comparison. Because I have a thing that I saw when I was a little kid that, to me, I don't think it was a fireball. It was very different. I thought it was a UFO, actually. And, like, but as time has gone on, I've kind of, like, thought back and questioned it. Like, wait a minute. Was I actually seeing something other than I thought I was? But I guess that's a whole other story.
Right. Wow. I have heard that there's like a weather thing that happens in the mountain areas with fireballs. Yeah. And so I'm like, that could really be the fireballs that,
like,
people say
like
Brujas
ball
are.
Lightning, maybe? Because I've thought
about
that, too.
Yeah, I've read about it, but I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what either one looks like.
I've only ever heard about it, and it's super rare, right? And scientifically speaking, just like lightning, when it's really dry, right? Like really dry, high static kind of environment. So like, you know, a lot of Mexico and a lot of like the Southwest and Colorado and New Mexico, it's pretty high elevation and it's a really dry climate, so maybe that's part of it. Because there's a the village where my great grandma's from, Los Sauces, Colorado, there's a hill, the hill of the witches, La Sierra.
Oh,
Sierra de Brujas.
Yes.
Yeah. And where they, like in the 50s, in the 1950s and 40s, people said all the time they saw the lights dancing around, and everybody was just convinced that's where the witches go to do their witchy things.
I'm going to have to look into this little place.
Yeah, I've got a picture. I can send you a picture of it. But it was like, but like after 1940 something was like, it stopped. And like, all activities. I've been down there. I've even gone to look at and took my own pictures, but like, there's nothing there anymore.
Oh, wow. They all moved.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, everybody left, right? It's like after World War II, everybody left down the San Luis Valley.
Wow.
But anyway, that's a whole tangent.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, we can get into San Miguel de Allende here.
Sure.
So, it's a colonial era city in Guanajuato, Mexico. It's small with cobblestone roads, beautiful buildings, amazing food, I hear. And it's also full of legends.
Yes, very much so. And when I knew it was, so this was kind of a random thing. A friend of ours invited us to go down there with her. It was like right after COVID, we all got vaccinated and we're like, okay, we can actually leave again. We can go do stuff.
We can travel.
So like, here's where we're going. And so I reached out to you to ask if you had any inside scoop, and you gave me a few tips and really helped guide our journey. So
I'm excited for it.
And I have a little more detail on the history too.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, yeah. Love it.
I went deep. I dug deep. So San Miguel de Allende is a beautiful colonial city in Guanajuato. It was built upon an even older civilization. When the Spanish arrived in the early 16th century, the city was known, now known as San Miguel, was an indigenous Chichimeca village called Itzcuinampan. The Spanish claimed the settlement and founded a mission dedicated to the Archangel Michael and a military outpost to support the silver mining and slavery operations in 1555. The name Allende comes from Ignacio Allende, who was born there later and played a key role in Mexico's War of Independence from 1810 to 1821. So our first haunt was the Hotel Sierra Nevada, which is an authentic collection of beautifully restored, once privately owned colonial casinos. It's a mixture of 16th to 18th century Spanish colonial mansions located only a block and a half away from the cathedral and the main city square. There are 37 rooms and suites, and they're spread among six main buildings, including Casa del Parque, which was a fort in the 17th century and later a customs house catering to the silver trade, and Casa Principal, which was the former residence of San Miguel de Allende's archbishop in 1580. And it's an official historic landmark. Just like any hotel, it has a really awesome restaurant. And so we dined there. And while we were waiting for our bill, I asked the waiter what he knew about fantasmas and el monje de casa caballo, which means the monk of the horse house, which is weird because he wasn't a monk. He was actually a butler, but for some... Oh, yeah, because he dressed up as a monk sometimes. It was like this weird thing.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
And so the waiter paused for a moment and asked, how do you know about that? And I was like, I just told him I'm a paranormal investigator. And my friends recommended that I come here. So he said, okay, hold on a minute. I'm not the one to ask. But then he called his colleagues who knew details of the history and had personal experiences with the spirits there. So we were introduced to Benjamin. And after some chatting, he offered to show us some of the most haunted places of the hotel. And so, as I mentioned before, the hotel is made up of multiple unconnected buildings spread throughout the city. Benjamin led us through the cobblestone streets under a light rain just after dusk to El Casa Caballo. This house is said to be haunted by a former butler named Gustavo. This is the monk of the horse house. And during stormy nights, legend has it that Gustavo's spirit appears looking for whoever wants to talk to him over a cup of coffee. And it is said that the smell of freshly brewed coffee is always present around the house.
Oh, that's nice, actually.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's really kind of cozy. It's really pleasant. Like, if we... I would totally stay in any of these rooms in this hotel if I was to go back again. And I didn't even check to see how much they cost. But I don't know that they're probably pretty pricey.
Yeah.
But it would be totally worth it. At least even for just one night, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But we had our private backstage after hours tour. We were permitted to explore on our own for a few minutes, and we took some photos. And in accordance with our standard practice, we also greeted any spirits who might be there. And we introduced ourselves and explained what we were doing. And we invited Gustavo to communicate if he would like to. And upon leaving, we said goodbye and let the spirits know that please stay here. We don't need you coming home with us.
Yeah.
Because they call it the hitchhiker effect is
is for real. It's definitely a thing.
I've read stories and heard stories. Yeah.
Yeah. So we always say, please stay here. Don't want to pick anything up. But we didn't get any pictures. Like, nothing came up on our pictures. We didn't really experience anything.
Did you smell, like, the coffee aroma?
I think I did. But I feel like it's so easy to be...
To hear it and then be like, right. Oh, yeah, I right? smell it. The, yeah.
I forget what's it called. It's just the highly subjective, subjective environment.
Like a bias or something?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's just a suggestive environment. Something like that. Right? So you start thinking everything has happened. And it's really, really easy to get caught up in that. So I think maybe. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's kind of a hipster town too. Like, so a lot of artists and stuff, like coffee. Kind of upscale in that area too. So, like, it could just be coffee from everywhere. But who knows?
Yeah.
Now, the next one is, our next stop was the Park House, which during the War of Independence was used as a barracks for the soldiers. Later, the house was purchased by a rich family, and Maria Teresa was a young woman who lived there, became ill, and died in the house. And her spirit is still said to be there, and she supposedly appears in the garden feeding the squirrels or in the kitchen looking for goodies. We were led through the halls and took photos all the while, paying respect to the spirits who may be residing there. Now, numerous staff members said that they'd had experiences, and usually this comes up time and time again. Everybody we talk to talked about how the children are the only ones who see her.
Oh. Right?
And so, although adults have experiences, it's only the kids that actually see her.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the staff members, and now in this house we talked to, was named Francisco. He had things happen where doors open and close on their own, and table settings. He would come in and like set the table and then go back to get more stuff and come back and it would be all rearranged and like nobody's there. And so he's wow. like, yeah, dealing with like, come on, guy.
Just let me set the table.
Yeah. Now, across from the Park House is a communal washing area. And this little placita, this little square, has been used for centuries by the residents of the community to wash their clothes. And it is said that on certain nights, specifically Tuesdays and Sundays, according to Francisco, an ethereal woman can be seen toiling away at the wash basin.
Huh.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we were not able to be there on those days. Like, those, it just happened, like, those were not the days we were there.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to note that all of the pictures that we took of this spot on the night of our excursion came back blurry and completely unidentifiable. Like, they were just really messed up. And then the next day, went back and took pictures and everything was perfectly clear.
Wow, weird.
So that's the strangest photo anomaly that we encountered directly. And it is really cool. Like, it's it there's a feel there. Like, definitely a sense of, you know, I mean, anytime, like, it's just been used for so long and this is just a thing. You can feel that energy there. But it feels different at night than it does during the day. And then we have the La Carreta de Muerte, the cart of death.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this was definitely your big hit. And Benjamin corroborated this story as well. And it's prominent throughout, and everybody knows about this. And actually, this is another one that people talk about, the kids being able to see more which is...
Wow, the kids.
Yeah.
That I have not heard about, because this legend is like all over Latin America and Mexico, and that I have never heard. Wow.
And this thing keeps coming up. All of these things, in fact, everybody I talked to specified that it's the kids are always particularly most sensitive to it. Right? So more often than not, it's the kids who see the woman at the washerwoman. And it's the kids who see, like, people will feel and sense it, but more often it's the kids. They kept coming back. It's the kids. And at first, because my Spanish is so terrible, I thought they were actually telling me, like, that there's the spirits of kids. Like, it's ghost kids.
That
are just, like, the whole city is just completely haunted by all these ghost kids. And the more I talked about it, I was like, the more I realized, no. They're telling me that it's the kids that are seeing it more.
Right.
I'm like, whew. Oh, that's much.
That's better. That's much better.
In a way, yeah. It's totally a little comforting in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So this, the cart of death is actually said to manifest in the street, and it's right there. So there's the park house. And the little wash plaza, and then this road that actually leads down into the park and up the hill to where the mission was, up on the hill. And this is where the cart appears. And it is advised not to be there past midnight to avoid encountering la
carta
muerte. Yes. And the cart is said to be drawn by two horses, driven by figures cloaked in dark robes and carrying a coffin. It is said that if you hear it, you should run away, because the person in the coffin will be you. We did not stay past midnight, but we said our goodbyes and gracefully thanked Francisco and Benjamin and the rest of the staff at the Hotel Sierra Nevada for their hospitality and willingness to share their history and folklore with us. And I have some interpretations of, in general, of this legend, because as you said, it is common throughout Latin America, just like La Llorona.
Like, yes, good
she's
job.
Everywhere too. And some of my elders and teachers have kind of shared a belief that there's an element to it that is analogous to slavery and trafficking. So it's like a manifestation of this cultural trauma.
Yes.
From from colonization in general. So, like, you know, and how do we separate a true spirit from a haunting? And, like, do we even have to do that too, right? Like,
exactly.
The culture is haunted by these things. And it manifests in its very real way. And so, in particular, what I find interesting about this one is that the cart is right there on the... This is the road that went to the mission. And during colonial times...
That's like... That adds like a layer of like...
Exactly, yeah. Right? Like, it's just right there. Right? Like, that's what's going on. And a similar thing with La Llorona, like how this idea that she's always associated with riverways, waterways, and roads, and even train tracks. And this is where, like, a lot of human trafficking happens too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it gets pretty heavy and pretty intense. But this... so much respect and beauty for the culture here in this place, and it's such an awesome, like, a gem of a place, and I'm so grateful to have gotten to go there. And I even think that I think I was called to it because it was so random of all the places.
Just how everything went down, that does seem very
and
random.
And afterwards I learned, I went back and looked at my 23andMe and found, like, I have DNA markers coming from Guanajuato. like hundreds of years ago.
Oh, from this,
from that region, right? Like not too far away.
Yeah.
And there's also it's a whole, this is a whole topic for a whole another podcast. But the Cañada de la Virgen is a indigenous pyramid site that's like 45 minutes away. It's a incredibly preserved temple complex, and we got to go there because that's my other thing. It's my other research. I'm also a culturalist.
I'm now looking at pictures of it.
Cultural astronomy.
Wow.
In fact, that's what I'm working on my master's in folklore, focusing
Amazing.
On cultural astronomy. So, like, I got in with the researchers there to do some field work at that site.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at all the pictures. It looks beautiful. It's apparently, it's Otomi.
So it's Otomi are the current, are the prominent,
the most recent
indigenous folks in the area who claim ancestry to it. But the there's other indicators that things came from Teotihuacan. And in particular, like the burials, there's two burials that are really interesting and remarkable. And they're like, one of them is an elder man who's identified as being about 52 years old when he died and was mummified. But he was died and mummified 1,000 years before he was buried, and they believe that
so he came from somewhere else,
and that they moved him there.
Wow.
And then the other one is La Niña Carrera, is so it's 13-year-old girl who is dressed as a warrior.
13-year-old warrior. Wow. Okay.
And it's particularly interesting because It's the only burial that we're aware of where a girl is dressed as a warrior.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. If you get in deep into the mythology of like the Nahua people, very similar to similar to Otomi. Linguistically, they're different, but traditions are very similar. And there's a lot of implications with associations with deities and those individual burials. So they think that, for example, like the elder, there's some things that indicate similarities to Tezcalipoca because he's missing his limb. Like his leg is not there, and he's buried with the kopili, the headdress. His headdress is bones, is carved in the shape of feathers.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's speculation that there may be some kind of association with him as like a personification of Tezcalipoca. But Tezcalipoca wasn't the main deity for the Otomi, but he was more for Nahua. And Otomi knew Tezcalipoca, but not in the same way. They were more working with Mishkoa, who is associated with the Milky Way galaxy. And it's so deep. Like that's a whole topic.
Wow, that's amazing that you got to see all these stuff.
Yeah, it's really, I feel like not to get too woo about it, but especially after
Like, there's just so many, like, really intensely mystical things that we experienced that, like, when I came back, I was like, that was just so bizarrely random that, like, just out of nowhere, we were, like, out of the midst of COVID, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like, okay, now it's time. Just go here and right into the, it's in the geographical center of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's someplace, like, I'd never heard of before. And all of a sudden we're being called to go here and we have this incredible experience. And then afterwards I come back and I looked back at my DNA and like, oh, I have some ancestors from that way. I think I might have been called to it.
Yeah, truly amazing.
Yeah. So that's my story.
Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for finally coming on. Not that it was you. It was like me rescheduling a bunch of times.
I mean, we wanted to try to do like last fall, actually. And that was my
true,
end.
True.
Just trying to get, because we moved to Estonia and trying to get settled. So that was on my end first. And then
yeah,
once everything finally got settled now. But I would definitely love to keep this going, right?
Yeah.
As part of the Crypto Science Society, I would be honored to invite you and MJ to become formal members of the group.
Oh, what? Oh, my gosh. Thank
yes,
you.
Honorary members.
Wow.
You assisted us with this investigation and this research, so...
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
And we're happy to continue collaborating with you in all of the ways.
Sounds good. Yes. Love it. Wow. I'm taken aback. Oh, yeah. And before we go, we like to give our listeners spooky recommendations.
Oh, yeah.
It can be any type of like media. Do you have any?
Mm. I would say... probably the Prey.
Oh, yes. Love it. Yes, it does.
Yeah. So as a spooky recommendation, although it deserves some criticism, there are a few things that are pretty cringy and I was pretty upset with, like, kind of the portrayal of the feminine person having to kind of fight to be a warrior, which...
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
definitely a Western kind of mindset imposition. Because, like, this is 300... Mm-hmm. Comanche 300 years ago. That's not really something that they would have been worrying about. In fact, there's a number of examples, even more recent contemporary examples of women being warriors and like gender fluidity and all that kind of stuff, sacred things.
Right, yes.
But from what I understand, you know, like producers and like Hollywood, they always have to make compromises in order for things to happen. Like, when Evanescence first had their first album, they had to have a male vocal on the track in order for them to get signed on the record. Which was total BS.
Oh.
And then once they were big, they were like, okay, we don't need that anymore.
They ditched them.
But like for this kind of thing, from what I understand, that was one of those things that they had to make that compromise with the producers in order to let it be made. But on the other side, it's really awesome, like indigenous empowerment kind of thing. And a whole like perspective of, yeah, dude, Comanches beat a predator.
Yes, yes.
And a woman, don't mess with those indigenous women.
Right?
They will mess you up.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm going to probably rewatch it here.
Definitely. I'll rewatch it again. Let it all sink in. But there's also implications too about like the relationships to like legendary creatures, right? Like there's all kinds of folklore within that about different kinds of beings. We could have a whole do a whole episode on that.
Let's schedule it.
Yeah, that's my recommendation. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then mine for this week, I just finished reading The Hacienda by Isabel Cañas, and really good gothic horror. I don't want to spoil things. I always spoil things in my summaries, and I'm trying not to.
Is it like it's like a legit gothic horror written in Spanish?
No, it's in English. But yeah, it would qualify as a gothic horror.
Because there's a book. Have you heard of? It's called Mexican Gothic.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I was excited about it.
They that one she did do. It came out in English, but she did herself. The author is a Mexican Canadian, and she translated it into Spanish herself.
This other one that you're talking about, or Mexican Gothic?
Mexican Gothic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But this one, this other one is in English, and, you know, it gets compared a lot. And I think it's a given with Mexican Gothic coming out first and being set in a haunted, you know, house with a woman protagonist. And so people are going to compare the two. And, you know, I love them both. They're different, though. So because people are like, oh, this is Rebecca meets Mexican Gothic. And I just hate when people take two popular things to compare it to something new.
It can be its own thing. Let it be its own thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, this book is amazing. I listened to the audiobook, and there was just some parts that were just so creepy that I'm like, I don't think I would have gotten that same vibe from reading the book myself. So, yes, really good book. Definitely recommend it.
All right. I have to check that one out.
Yes, yeah. And before we go, do you want to share your socials, anything that you want people to find you?
We're on all the socials, and we have a podcast. So the easiest way to go there is just look up the Linktree, which is Linktree. It's Paracryptology at linktree.com.
And I will share the link in the show notes.
But yeah, it's Paracryptology, but yeah, just Linktree Paracryptology, or just Google Crypto Science Society, and the podcast comes up on most things pretty easy.
Perfect. And again, I will share it in the show notes. And yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming on, and stay as spooky. We'll catch everyone next time. Bye. Thank you so much to the Spookies supporting us on Patreon. Ashes, Anne, Melida, Janie, Michelle, Monica, Modesto, Cynthia, Perla, Yesenia, Dalia, Mariela, Renee, Iris, Ghost Train, and Madtown Charity. Your support means the world to us. And if you want to join the Patreon and get bonus episodes, monthly goodies in the mail, and more, go over to patreon.com/spookytales. Spooky Tales is hosted by Christina and MJ, produced and edited by Christina, and is a proud member of the Cultivate Network. For more podcasts on the network, check out cultivatepodcastnetwork.com. Don't forget to check out our Spooky merch. We have Spooky shirts, we have No Mamas shirts, and we have a cool hat that I just added. It's like a baseball hat, not like a hat. We also have a beanie in there, and they just say Spooky on there, but I'm a big fan of the hat. It says Spooky in Old English letters, and I love it. I wear it every day, not because I want to go around repping the podcast, but it's comfy. It's a great hat. You can go to spookytales.com/store. I'm always adding new designs. And feel free to share this with a spooky friend. Spooky season is coming up, so make sure you rate and review and tell your friends about us. Stay spooky.